Many conflicting statements have been made about the St. Lawrence Seaway and Power Project. Our job is to try to get at the truth of the matter. For the past 3 weeks, a special subcommittee of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee has been holding hearings on a joint resolution which would approve the project. Let me ask you this. Why should I be interested in the St. Lawrence Seaway? You see, I come from Texas. The interest you two gentlemen have is obvious. The Seaway will directly affect New England and the Midwest. But, Senator Saltonstall, why should I be concerned about it? And why should that mythical listener of ours, Bill Johnson, who lives in Omaha or Seattle or Mobile, be interested in it?
Well, for one thing, Mr. Fisher, you and Bill Johnson are going to have to help pay for the Seaway project. And for another thing, it will affect Americans wherever they live, to some extent. They may find themselves in the position of paying for something that will actually harm their interests, and paying not only the original cost, but a substantial annual upkeep.
Representative Pittenger, what do you say?
The St. Lawrence Seaway and Power Project will affect every man, every woman, and every child in America, because it will add to our national wealth by helping to develop our resources. It will open up the heart of the continent to deep-sea trade. And not only that, it will also harness one of the greatest potential sources of cheap electric power in the continent, the St. Lawrence River.
All right, then the issues boil down to these two questions. Will the development of the St. Lawrence Project be beneficial to the American people? And if so, will the benefits be great enough to justify the expense? But first, Senator Saltonstall, just what is the St. Lawrence Project?
The proposed Seaway and Power Project is designed to connect the Great Lakes with the St. Lawrence River. By an intricate system of canals and locks, it would supposedly enable ocean-going vessels to go directly to Detroit, Chicago, and other Great Lake ports. But fully loaded Liberty and Victory ships couldn't get through the 27-foot channel.
Let's come back to that question later, Senator. But now, what about the power part of the project?
It proposes building a huge dam across the St. Lawrence at the International Rapids, where the river is the boundary between Ontario, Canada, and New York State. It would produce more electric power than any single dam in the world except Grand Coulee. And this power would be divided equally between Canada and the United States.
It's easy to see why the St. Lawrence Project has caught the imagination of a great many people. Its sheer magnitude makes it dramatic. Congressman Pittenger, you've been advocating this project for a good many years, haven't you?
Yes, Mr. Fisher, ever since the year 1912. That's the year I located at Duluth, Minnesota.
How about telling us a little of its history?
Well, it has quite a career. It has had the backing of seven different presidents of both political parties. It has been surveyed and resurveyed and found to be eminently practical. The last time by a seven-volume study made by the Department of Commerce in 1941. All that is needed is the construction of canals around a series of rapids, 48 miles of them scattered over a 113-mile stretch between Montreal and Lake Ontario, where existing canals are obsolete and too small for most vessels. Then we'd have an inland seaway stretching almost 2,400 miles from the mouth of the St. Lawrence River to Duluth at the western end of Lake Superior, and that would accommodate deep-sea ships.
Why, then, has Congress never approved it?
The Senate very nearly did approve it back in 1934 when it came up in the form of a treaty. After a long debate, the vote was 46 to 42 for ratification, but it failed nevertheless for lack of a two-thirds vote. It came up again in 1941 in its present form, an agreement requiring a simple majority vote of approval by both Senate and House. But before it could come to a vote, the war forced postponement of all long-range projects.
And don't forget it came up for a third time in 1944 in the form of an amendment to another bill. That time, the Senate turned it down by a vote of 56 to 25.
Yes, that is correct. That was Senator Aiken's amendment.
Senator Saltonstall, you testified against the St. Lawrence Project at last week's hearings. Why did you oppose it?
Very briefly, Mr. Fisher, because I feel it would be injurious to the ports, the trade, the industry, and particularly the workers of New England. We are in the far northeastern section of our country. We need transportation by land, sea, and air in order to do business. We import much of our raw materials and some of our food. We are going to have a tough fight to keep our industries from being removed to other sections of the country. We are the men who have the skill and the managers who have the know-how. We want no favors, but we do want a fair break to compete with other sections of the country without government interference and government help to those other sections. If we cannot compete, then naturally the business will go elsewhere. But we should not have to compete with government as well as with business competitors.
With due respect to the senator, whom I greatly admire, I must point out that this is a sectional viewpoint. I think we should look at the question from the viewpoint of the nation as a whole.
That is the key question, of course, Congressman. Will the Seaway Project benefit the country as a whole? But, of course, the country is made up of various regions.
And what affects one affects them all, Mr. Fisher.
So let's try first to pin down the effects on New England. Senator Saltonstall, can you be a little more specific on the damages you think would result in your region?
Well, the most immediate effect of the Seaway would be on the transportation system. Once ships started to go up the St. Lawrence, this would cut off part of the trade that now goes through New England. That affects our railroads, particularly the Boston and Maine and the Boston and Albany.
I don't think that will necessarily follow, Senator. If our total export trade is increased by the development of cheaper transportation, then we can have increased trade through the Seaway without any real effect on the railroads. The Seaway will make it possible to export products which can't be shipped out profitably by rail. Very little rail traffic will be diverted to the Seaway.
Seems to me perfectly obvious that if materials which formerly had to go by rail and deep sea ocean transport were to go directly by ocean transport, the ports must be seriously affected. Incidentally, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is spending over $65 million to develop Boston Harbor and the Boston Airport. While we are spending this, you ask us to spend more millions to bypass ourselves.
Former President Hoover has answered that. He says, I have no hesitation in my belief as to the economic value of the project.
I have great admiration for Mr. Hoover, but I repeat what I've just said. The interests of the Port of Boston do not agree with him.
Senator, the opposition of the American railroads to this agreement, and they are the main opposition force, reminds me of the way the stagecoach companies and private toll roads opposed the first railroads. They tried to convince the farmers that the railroads would destroy the market for their horses and their oats. The campaign against the St. Lawrence is just about as futile as that in the long run.
Congressman, Massachusetts brains, energy, and money helped to open up the stagecoach routes to the west and were largely responsible for opening up the railroad routes across the country. I cannot see how this same combination of brains, energy, initiative, and money agreeing to back the St. Lawrence waterway to its own detriment.
What about the other half of the St. Lawrence project, Senator Saltonstall, the power development? Wouldn't that mean cheaper power in the whole northeastern region?
Mr. Fisher, I don't know so much about the power development connected with this project, but I do know this, that it is to be entirely under the control of the state of New York, which is putting up some $90 million for the privilege. If a power project is to be developed, we should consider developing it entirely with federal money, for I believe that such power should be available to everyone on equal terms and not monopolized by the interests of one state.
Under the agreement, Senator, the federal government would be pledged to ensure the fair distribution of power to other states, including New England. The St. Lawrence, incidentally, will produce cheaper power by far than any steam plant in existence. It can be delivered 250 miles, which would reach well into Massachusetts, for only 2.5 cents a kilowatt hour.
But the fact remains, Congressman, that the power will be controlled by the state of New York.
Senator, I want to point this out. In 1923, a group of 30 New England leaders appointed by President Coolidge studied the project and approved it. And in 1929, Henry Harriman, then president of the Boston Chamber of Commerce, made a similar study. He issued a report concluding with these significant words, I quote, I am convinced that the St. Lawrence Seaway is of as great importance to New England as to the Middle West, and that New England should unitedly, heartedly, and enthusiastically support the project. Now, that's what Mr. Harriman says. Even today, New England leaders support this view. Senator Aiken of Vermont and Senator Toby of New Hampshire are examples.
I'm well aware that Mr. Harriman made such a study, but I want to inform you that today the Boston Chamber of Commerce is unanimously against this project, that the New England Council, which is composed of New England businessmen, is against it, that the Associated Industries of Massachusetts is against it, and to the best of my knowledge, the study which was made at that time has almost unanimously been repudiated as of the present date.
I think we'd better get off the regional question and on to our main question. How will the Seaway project affect the country as a whole? Senator Saltonstall, is it a practical venture?
From a purely physical viewpoint, Mr. Fisher, there are two things wrong with the St. Lawrence Seaway project. One is that it will be frozen up 5 months out of the year. The other is that it will not be practical for most ocean-going vessels to traverse it.
Let's take these questions up one at a time. Mr. Pittenger, what about the freeze-over period?
Nothing to it. The same thing is true of the Great Lakes, and yet they are the greatest inland seaway in the world. Most of the heavy shipments of grain would go out before December 1st.
In effect, Congressman, you would use cheap water transportation 7 months in the year and expect the railroads to carry the loss. Then, during the winter, you would expect the railroads to carry an extra load of traffic while the seaway is frozen over.
Not at all, Senator. During the peak period of grain shipments around October, the seaway would relieve the railroads of the necessity of building extra boxcars for seasonal use only. As for the winter traffic, that is the lowest freight season of the year anyhow for the railroads. They could easily handle that traffic.
Right now, we have a very acute shortage of grain in New England. The biggest bottleneck at the moment is boxcars. Suppose the railroad gave up keeping so many boxcars. What a nice predicament this would leave New England in during the winter months when it must feed its cattle and its poultry.
On your second point, Senator Saltonstall, is it true that large ships won't be able to go through the seaway?
No ship drawing more than 23 feet of water can safely go through a 27-foot channel. You have to allow an extra foot when a deep-sea vessel enters fresh water. It settles that much because of the lower density of the water. And you need at least between 2 and 3 feet of clearance for safety.
Seems to me that the practicability of the St. Lawrence Seaway hinges to a great extent on this point. Mr. Pittenger, would most of our huge wartime merchant fleet be unable to get up to the Great Lakes?
Why, of course they could get through the Great Lakes, Mr. Fisher. The U.S. Maritime Commission has stated that the great bulk of our merchant fleet could use the seaway. In fact, the commission argues that we need the seaway to make maximum use of our merchant marine. The engineers have stated that ships drawing 24 and a half feet of water can pass through safely.
Most of our ships are Liberty or Victory ships. The Victory draws 28 feet 3 inches loaded, and the Liberty only 6 inches less. A careful study by the Port of Boston Authority states, quote, "The vision of great ships sailing up and down the St. Lawrence vanishes into thin air, and in its place emerges the more practical picture of a small freighter drawing not over 23 feet, end of quote. The Victories and the Liberties might get into the Great Lakes unloaded, but they'd run aground coming out if they're fully loaded.
It is true that those two types of ships couldn't get through fully loaded. But according to the Maritime Commission, the Victory ships could go through 79% loaded, and the Liberty ships 85% loaded. Most of the ships that pass through the Panama Canal, after all, are only about two-thirds loaded.
And another thing, if you open the seaway to all comers, our tremendously efficient Great Lakes fleet may conceivably be injured.
No one can compete with those ships in Great Lakes traffic. Senator Saltonstall, they are built for that specific purpose. They carry up to 15,000 tons, and they are built for rapid loading and unloading. 7/8 of the cargo they carry is iron, limestone, coal, and other products used for making steel. That's purely domestic trade. No foreign ships could compete there.
But in the export trade, foreign ships would presumably load at the source and would deprive the lake carriers of some of their cargo. And I suspect that very few of our deep-sea vessels would be able to compete with the lower wages and costs on foreign ships.
That wouldn't be any more true in the Great Lakes than it is in Boston Harbor, Senator. All the seaway would do would be to put the Great Lakes cities on a par with Boston as far as access to world trade is concerned.
Seems to me, Congressman, that by your answer you would directly admit that this seaway would take business away from Boston.
Congressman Pittenger, how much traffic do you think would pass through the seaway?
The canal would have a capacity of about 10 million tons of cargo during the open season. Of this, an estimated 4 million tons would be export trade and the rest domestic.
I think those figures are pretty dubious, especially the latter one. Whether the seaway will carry any such volume of traffic depends on whether such trade is profitable, which is certainly open to question. We have the testimony of the Port of New York Maritime Association and of the president of the American Merchant Marine Institute, which includes practically all American shipping interests, that they don't want to send their ships up the St. Lawrence.
The ships would use it all right, in my opinion. Government surveys have shown that. Some of the domestic traffic, Senator, would be with your own New England. We'd ship farm products to you via the waterway, and you'd send back manufactured products to us.
You assume that cost of shipping is the only factor, Congressman. You forget that speed and convenience are important, too. We can get automobiles from Detroit by railroad in 3 days and over the road in 2 days. It would take much longer to send them by water. It's over twice as far, and ships are slow. Food especially must be sent to market fast, or it deteriorates.
Senator, isn't there a basic inconsistency there? First, you argued that the Seaway would hurt the railroads, but now you argue that it couldn't compete with them in speed or good service.
I'm looking at it from both angles. If extensive traffic does not develop, the St. Lawrence project will be a waste of money. If it does develop, then it will be competing with the railroads and the lake boats that need the trade.
The Seaway would be a great national asset from the point of view of the American people, all of them. Look at the benefits they would get.
Such as what, Mr. Pittenger?
Well, the farmers of the Middle West and Northwest would be able to save a great deal of money in shipping costs.
You may be right, Congressman, but figures shown to me do not call for any such statement, to say nothing of the fact that all figures are based on theory. Again, may I quote the Boston Port Authority? They state, quote, "Consequently, the elaborate tables of the survey must be regarded as merely interesting numerical exercises, representing at best what an unknown accountant has described as a mathematical photograph of a statistician's sense of justice."
I think it pretty well established that farmers can earn more if their transportation costs are low. The National Grains and the National Farmers Union are backing the St. Lawrence project for that reason. But there are other benefits, too. We can ship automobiles abroad more cheaply and sell them, more of them, in the world market.
We can sell all the cars that people have money to buy as soon as they are available. We don't have to compete in this field. We already produce the cheapest cars in the world. And as for wheat, the farmer wouldn't necessarily get all the savings. The middleman would get a large share.
Another thing, you could bring certain essential raw materials into the industrial heart of America by using the Seaway and save our own resources.
What resources, Congressman?
Wood pulp and iron ore from Quebec if we need it. Some experts say that in another 15 years, the high-grade ore deposits in Minnesota Iron Range will be exhausted. They say we'll have to draw on deposits that have been discovered in Quebec unless we can find ways to use our low-grade ore. This is not too soon to start planning for that emergency after all. It will take several years to build the Seaway.
If what you say is so, I am very sure there is plenty of transportation available today to meet this situation, and we need not develop a tremendous Seaway which will cost so much money simply as a conservation project.
How much money would it cost, Senator Saltonstall?
The whole St. Lawrence project, including both the Seaway and the power plant, is officially supposed to cost $619 million, but other estimates have run to over $1 billion. Judging from the experience we had with the Panama Canal and with the Grand Coulee Dam, we'd be lucky if the St. Lawrence project didn't cost more than $1 billion.
Lieutenant General R.A. Wheeler, Chief of the Army Engineering Corps, is responsible for that estimate of $619 million. He should know how much it would cost. But Canada is putting up almost half of the money, and by the time New York State's $90 million contribution to the dam and power plant is subtracted, our share would be only about $200 million. A year ago, we were spending more than that on the war one and every day.
That's still a lot of money, Congressman, by my lights, especially when we asked to help to pay for a project that stands to harm us or some of us. It's like having to pay for widening a street that abuts on your property when the so-called improvement impairs the value of that property. And that's what you're asking New England to do.
Let me break in here a moment. These technical matters may be a bit confusing to Bill Johnson, our average listener. He finds technical discussions like this a bit hard to take at best. Let me bring up a new question here. We've been talking about the St. Lawrence Seaway and Power Project as if it were simply an American project. But as I understand it, Canada has as much at stake as we do. Is that right, Senator Saltonstall?
Yes, Mr. Fisher. Canada has already signed this agreement, and I'd like to point this out. Although Canada pays less toward the cost of the project than we do, she stands to gain more from it.
In what way, Senator?
For one thing, 90% of the St. Lawrence River is in exclusively Canadian territory.
But the main centers of population on the Great Lakes, which the Seaway would serve, are American cities, Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago.
That's true, but as far as wheat and grains are concerned, I'm told that the great bulk of United States grain exports originate in the Southwest and move through Gulf ports. The majority of the export grain moving over the lakes to the seaports comes from Canada. The Canadian farmer will get most of the benefits from wheat exports via the Seaway.
Of course, Senator, Canada has already spent a great deal of money on her part of the Seaway in the belief that we would join forces with her in completing it.
Most of the work that has been done by Canada was on the Welland Canal between Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. That enabled Canada to ship grain from the west end of Lake Superior all the way to Prescott at the head of the International Rapids in the St. Lawrence. But let me point out that the Welland Canal must be deepened and broadened to let ocean-going vessels through.
Nevertheless, Canada has already spent $133 million on the project. She has gone ahead of us, and we have an obligation to join her and pay our share.
I don't think that should be a serious consideration, Congressman. Canada acted on her own, and for her own reasons, in making these improvements. We've spent some money, too, in building the MacArthur Lock at Sault Ste. Marie, and that would be deducted from our share. But we did it because we needed that lock.
Congressman Pittenger, what about the military value of the St. Lawrence Seaway? Would it have been very useful in the war if it had been in operation then?
There's no doubt about that, Mr. Fisher. It would have been a godsend. It would have relieved our overburdened railroads and docking facilities, and the saving and transportation costs would have been enormous. We could also have built more big ships in the Great Lakes area.
No doubt more ships might have been built in the Great Lakes. But here again, we in New England are proud of our heritage of shipbuilding. We built all of the ships asked of us during the war, and we had plenty of room on our shores to build more. These ships consisted of aircraft carriers, battleships, and cruisers, among others. Ships that could never go through a 27-foot channel, loaded or unloaded.
Yet we could have built many smaller warships. In this war, we were fortunate that our shores never came under direct attack. If our seaports had been bombed, we would have needed the St. Lawrence Seaway very badly. We would have needed the added protection of inland seaports. The next war, if there is another, may be different.
If our shores had been under attack, I question whether the Seaway would have helped very much. It would have been quite vulnerable. After all, only a few well-placed bombs would have been required to put the locks out of commission, bottling up our Great Lakes shipping. But all this is beside the point. The next war, if one comes, won't be fought with the same weapons as the past one. I don't know what the weapons will be, but I certainly know atomic energy in some form is going to play a very great part.
What do you say to that, Congressman Pittenger?
Well, Mr. Fisher, I think that Secretary of War Robert Patterson is the best authority on those matters. He has quoted a survey by the Joint Chiefs of Staff as saying that we need the St. Lawrence Seaway and Power Project to protect the nation's security in the event of a national emergency for three reasons. First, the additional shipbuilding and repair facilities the project would make possible in a relatively secure area. Second, the additional line of transportation to ease the strain on railroads and port facilities. And third, the large supply of cheap, dependable power it would make available. The Joint Chiefs of Staff said that the St. Lawrence Project, and I quote, would have distinct military advantages and would materially increase the industrial and transportation potential of the United States.
If this project is to be a purely a military one, that is an entirely different question from what I've been discussing.
Let's see now where we come out on this. You both agree, I take it, that the St. Lawrence Seaway and Power Project is feasible from an engineering viewpoint. You differ on whether the depth of the Seaway and the fact that it will be closed during five winter months will be serious handicaps. You also disagree on whether it will have an adverse effect on railroads, shipping facilities, and industry in New England.
There is bound to be some dislocation, Mr. Fisher. There always is, wherever progress is made in any field. I only say that the benefits will far outweigh any temporary dislocation in the country as a whole and in every region, including New England. Wherever you expand the country's resources, you create new employment and new wealth. Why, in building the project alone, the Commerce Department estimates that 25,000 men will be employed directly and as many indirectly over a four-year period. We may need those jobs by the time construction is ready to start.
Those jobs won't count for much, Congressman, if in the long run you displace thousands of other workers. I understand that's why the Railroad Brotherhoods and the United Mine Workers Union oppose the project.
That's a short-sighted view for them to take. In the first place, the Seaway will make more jobs by increasing the total amount of our trade. In any case, there will be plenty of demand for coal and railroad facilities for as far ahead as we can see. And incidentally, many labor unions, both AF-of-L and CIO, are supporting this project.
You believe then, Congressman Pittenger, that the Seaway and Power Project will provide new jobs and better prices for farm products and greater prosperity for all?
That is right, Mr. Fisher.
And Senator Saltonstall, you oppose the project, mainly on the ground that New England interests might be harmed?
That's my main reason. But I'm not convinced that the project will come anywhere near achieving many of the things its sponsors claim. And let me add this. We in New England are not asking help from anyone. We have the skilled workers with the know-how. We have capable management. For generations, we've pulled together. With increasing competition throughout the country, we've got to fight just as hard as we can to keep and, if possible, increase our production. I'm confident we can do this if government does not set up obstacles which ever make it increasingly difficult.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Now it's up to us listeners to draw our own conclusions from the facts and the arguments pro and con that you've so ably presented.